Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 12th and final round.
Right hand, Golovkin steps in and down he goes again.
Unbelievable.
Mayweather makes him pay. What a rookie mistake.
A sensational left hook by De La Hoya.
It's facts. I'm the best. You know what I mean? Sometimes I don't want to believe it myself, but it's the truth. I'm the best.
I'm going to show you how great I am.
From Southern California, this is the Last Round Podcast.
Welcome back to this week's episode of the Last Round Podcast. Thank you again for joining us. Please don't forget, if you're listening on Spotify, hit that follow button. It's very easy. Just click it, and then you end up following our podcast on Spotify. It helps our algorithm within the app and our rankings, and helps us grow more organically, and then it helps us get bigger and bigger guests. Same thing with Apple Podcasts. Please subscribe or just rate us 5 stars. It helps us algorithm. It's free. Please help us out with all that stuff, wherever you're listening, Google, wherever. It definitely helps us, and it takes a couple seconds out of your day. So we would definitely appreciate that. Jumping straight back into it, fight reviews this past Saturday, the 16th of March, from the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas on DAZN. William Zepeda remains undefeated at 30-0. With the decision win, over Maxi Hughes. Zepeda had 26 KOs going into this fight. He still has 26 KOs, obviously. Was known, or is known, for the pressure and his accurate volume punching. He started quick, but Hughes, I think, trained for that. And he started, they both pretty much started with a quick pace, from my understanding. But obviously, Maxi Hughes came out on the losing end. I mean, it's hard, right, Mike, to these big volume punchers who can just, you know, they just keep coming and coming and coming. You know, there's one thing like a Joe Joyce, big old guy, you know, the juggernaut, he doesn't stop. But like the lower weight class is obviously, it's a lot more punches because of the speed. It's a lot less weight for them to carry around, so they can throw more, they have more stamina to throw more punches, essentially. I mean, before we kind of dive in and get your analysis on Zepeda's win, Mike, I mean, how do you rate, or how do you look at these type of volume punchers like that? High volume.
As you were opening up the Danny, I thought I'd log on to CompuBox. I'll throw a couple of stats at you. So punches thrown per round. Top, William Zepeda, 101.8.
That's nuts.
In second place, and nowhere near, 87, Chocolatito. And then 86.4 for Brandon Figueroa. Secondly, punches landed per round. Zepeda, 33.8. Second place, Chocolatito with 30. And then Mateus, 26.1. So that just goes to show you.
That guy, but see, that's a lot different, because think about the fighters, or fighters in general, who, you know, they throw a high volume, but they don't connect. Like, it's just punches being thrown. When you can throw that, like, a high volume like that and sustain it throughout 10, 12 rounds, and you can have a higher accuracy, I mean, that means, like, you know, they're not essentially, you wouldn't call them wasted attempts, right?
No, and with Zepeda as well, he also seems to have pop. It's not like he's just throwing them out there, but there's not much behind them, because if you look at his record, obviously, you know, he's got a lot of stoppages on top of that as well. So obviously there's something behind each one. And then also when he comes out, you know, with that many punches being thrown, and there's also power behind them, as you can see with Maxi Hughes, slowly but surely he wanted to throw less, because he knows, you know, I need to cover up, because every time like he throws, you know, Maxi Hughes tried to throw with him, but the problem was Zepeda was landing. Zepeda had a lot of pop behind it. So he ended up kind of going into his shell, which then just encouraged Zepeda to throw more and more and more and more, because there was less and less coming back.
Right, right. Well, break down what you thought about the actual fight, Zepeda's actual win here.
I thought it was a good performance. I think me and you both said we thought Zepeda would probably get Maxi Hughes out of there. I think I said in the later rounds, though, I don't think I thought as early as it was going to happen. You know, and as we touched on, if you look at Maxi Hughes' career, you know, it wasn't that long ago that he was fighting for, like, you know, British title level and was, you know, was getting beaten. But he managed to turn it around, you know, with a change of coach, beating people like Cade Galahad and stuff like that on the way. But, you know, coming over here, and you kind of got a feel for him in some ways, right? Because he probably beat George Kambosos. Kambosos ended up kind of getting in the gift of a decision, and now he's fighting Lomachenko. His kind of reward, or like, here, you know, we kind of agree that you lost that fight, so here's another big fight in America. They gave him William Zepeda, you know, someone that kind of everyone's been avoiding. So you kind of really have to feel for Maxi, because just looking at the matchup, you could tell that it was stylistically, it wasn't good, because Zepeda throws so much where Maxi Hughes doesn't really throw that much. He's kind of a counterpuncher. He kind of throws when you throw, but nowhere near the amount of punches that William Zepeda throws. You know, I thought the right person won. I thought after the first round, like you kind of said, Maxi kind of wilted. And it's really interesting, you know, where Zepeda's going to go from here. You know, it's great to watch, good for TV. And I think, like we said last week, he's the sort of person that's going to have to get himself into a mandatory, because nobody's going to just voluntarily choose to fight William Zepeda.
How likely do you think that Zepeda and Shakur Stevenson fight before the end of this year? Because like you said, they're both in that same position where... Mm-hmm. Nobody really would volunteer to fight them if they don't really have to, because they're both high risk, low reward. So why not put them against each other? I think there was like some rumblings where they were kind of talking about, I think Oscar even tweeted at Shakur Stevenson or something after the fight. I mean, why not put them against each other? I mean, how likely do you think that happens before the end of this year?
I mean, I think we'd all like to see it. It's a good fight, but it's just the problem you have is obviously it's Golden Boy gets top rank, and you know, sometimes you see that, but normally there's something behind it. There's like another agreement for another fight, you know, something like that. But at the minute, it's kind of like Shakur's doing really, really well for top rank. Zepeda's doing really well, you know, for Golden Boy. Are they going to stick them together? I mean, I would hope so, because at times I do believe that Oscar kind of puts this out on, you know, Twitter or X or whatever, saying, hey, let's make it. But behind closed doors, he sometimes doesn't want to, but he kind of portrays a different, you know, side in social media. So
they all do that.
Yeah. So we all end up blaming Bob Arum, you know, because Bob Arum's not as active, obviously, because he's a 93-year-old man compared to, you know, someone like Oscar De La Hoya. Kind of looking at the rankings, someone you could see Zepeda in with. There's not many people in Golden Boy stable, really, to be honest with you, that they could put them against. That's kind of, that division's really taken up by top rank. If you look at the top 10, you've got Javonte Davis, probably not. Shakur Stevenson, that's who you're talking about right now. Lomachenko's obviously fighting Kambosos. Frank Martin's with PBC. Yoshinu, I'm not too sure who he's with. Zepeda's in sixth. Then you've got Abdulev, Keyshawn Davis, top rank. Murataya, top rank. George Kambosos, top rank.
Right. And Golden Boy, I think, would like to put Ryan and Zepeda against each other. I mean, it's under their roof, but seems pretty likely that Ryan would be against that fight.
Yeah, 100%. It'd be very far too active, I would have thought, for someone like Ryan. You know, a good fight would have been maybe someone like Jojo Diaz has announced that they're fighting, but I don't know whether it's been confirmed by Golden Boy. You know, Jojo Diaz and Oscar Duarte. I think either of those...
That's a pretty fun fight.
It's a fun fight, but I think either of those would have been a good scalp for William Zepeda. You know, if you get in someone like, especially like a Jojo, because of the fight.
Well, what if you put a Duarte and a Zepeda, two Mexicans going at each other? I feel that'd be a fun fight too.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we touched it. A lot of them obviously are, are going to be with top rank. So it's kind of like hard for them really to get him someone of note, isn't it, at this minute?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, who's the only logical one that has the highest probability of happening? It's Shakur Stevenson, isn't it?
And I'm sorry, he fought Jojo Diaz, didn't he, in October
20th? Yeah, that's right. He did fight Jojo Diaz.
I should remember. I was there.
That's true. You were there. Yeah, I mean, you touched on a couple PBC guys in the weight class, but, you know, we've seen from history that politics there just are too strong. I mean, Zepeda and Stevenson, even though it's Golden Boy, DAZN, top rank ESPN, that seems like the most, that has the highest probability of happening from a cross promotional standpoint, right?
Yeah, I mean, you would think so. They've done business before. And it kind of makes sense. But the problem you have with boxing is at times, you know, people don't want to share their toys, you know. That's the that's the worst thing I would have said, you know, about, you know, these cross promotion fights. They both want something back, you know, in hand, for example. Like, okay, well, if we get this, we want that. So it's kind of like childish at times, instead of just getting all the big fights that we want to see. So, you know, hopefully Zepeda keeps, you know, himself busy this year. And, you know, now he's sixth in the rankings on BoxRec. It's, you only really want to look up, right? So unfortunately, most of those are, you know, top rank and PBC.
Yeah, because like, you're right. And that we're naming all those names, and Zepeda and Stevenson are literally the ones kind of in the similar corner where nobody really wants to fight them. And I think today or this week they were talking about, who were they talking about for Stevenson? Do you know? Oh, I feel like I read something where they were talking about a potential opponent for Stevenson.
I know on the weekend they were talking about Zepeda.
I think one of them was Zepeda, but I feel like I saw another name. But I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's the only one that makes sense. Like, in terms of a high profile fight, I mean, Zepeda's 30-0 now. So, I mean, unless you put, because this fight was at 135, right? Maxi Hughes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know, unless Zepeda moves up. I don't think they're going to try to have him move up unless he's obviously having trouble, if he's having trouble making the weight, which doesn't seem like he is. They haven't said anything. But 5 pounds up, you got Arnold Barboza, you got Jose Ramirez, 2 Mexicans. Is that out of the realm of possibility?
Yeah, and obviously with, you know, a lot of the other guys moving up, a lot more money as well. Like you said, like Ryan, Devin, guys like that are all at 140. So, you know, it's kind of, even Javonte Davis is kind of flirting with 140, right? Because everyone seems to have moved up there, and it tends to be, you know, more of the, more money in that division. So it's interesting. I mean, Zepeda as well, I always think he's older. He's only 27.
Oh, because his face looks a lot older than he is.
Mm.
That's why. He has one of those, that piece of genetics where you just look older. What do you call it? A Benjamin Button, that movie. But yeah, I think Zepeda Stevenson makes sense to me, because he beat Jojo Diaz. Doesn't seem like Ryan's going to willingly fight him. So that's most likely out of the question, even though they're under the same banner. Stevenson, even though he's on the other side, makes the most sense in terms of a higher profile fight with an elite fighter. And if that for some reason doesn't happen because of the cross promotion and the broadcasters, then Zepeda, I feel like Golden Boy would be like, okay, well, you know, do you want to move up to 140 and fight Barboza, fight Jose Ramirez, fight, you know, one of these guys? You know, if they're higher profile opponents, you're just going to have to move up.
Well, Barboza is going to be fighting Devin Haney, right?
Well, as of right now, no, but we still have, when is April 20th?
Yeah.
So we still have about a month as of today, about a month until that fight. A lot can happen between now and then, you know, even though Ryan says online, which we'll touch on later, that he's training and he's doing videos and he's going to, the fight will go happen. A lot can happen between now and 30 days. So we'll touch more on that in detail a little later in the show. But yeah, I think it's either Stevenson in terms of a high profile fight for Zepeda and vice versa for Stevenson, or Zepeda moves up and fights Jose Ramirez, Arnold Barboza, both under Golden Boy now, the zone. I mean, what else makes sense, right? Let's take a guess right now. Let's just say we're in March right now, 9 months, the rest of the year. Does Zepeda get either Barboza or, well, yeah. Does Zepeda get, if you had to put money on it, does Zepeda get to move to 140 and have a fight there, either against Barboza or Ramirez, or does he fight somebody like a Stevenson? What do you think? Because like you said, he has limited options, right?
I could see him maybe getting the Shakur Stevenson fight because I could see Mauricio Sulaiman just out of nowhere, like mandating it because he's Mexican.
Yeah, maybe. We've seen that before.
Just saying like, hey, mandatory purse bids. Obviously, you know, Shakur Stevenson is a WBC holder. That's, you know, because it's just what the WBC do. They just come out with these wild things.
Where is Zepeda in the rankings for the WBC?
I'll have to pull it up.
Check it out. Because I don't think on the broadcast this past Saturday, they really focused on that, right? They might have touched on it, but I think if he was mandatory or something like that.
As of February, he was number one. So just literally just below.
So there's a mandatory and then there's number one. Right? Is that how it works?
Well, kind of, because you've got Isaac Cruz is the WBC silver. So in the rankings, he's higher.
Right. Which I don't understand that. Like
these haven't been updated since February 19th. So like a
month. Well, Cruz is fighting in 2 weeks, a little less than 2 weeks now. Yeah, I mean, well, he's closer. Imagine an Isaac Cruz Williams a pay to fight. I mean, it's not going to happen, but that's a fun fight too.
Yeah.
That's a fun fight, man. Those guys would go at it. Those guys would go at it. But it sucks that, you know, that's going to be very, very difficult to make. Because
Raymond Murataya would be good. Robert Garcia.
Robert Garcia actually tweeted, or his account tweeted, it's probably his son, but that he'd be open to that fight.
Great fight.
Yeah. So why not? Why not? But yeah, Zepeda is going to be in a tough spot, but you know, let's see what happens before the end of this year. And the co-main event, Floyd Schofield, who was on our show in the past, remains undefeated as well with a strange victory here, where his opponent got disqualified in Esturi Suero for multiple low blows. You know, what did you think about this fight? It seems like Suero was fighting kind of dirty, right?
It's a very strange fight. You know, he's just decided to get himself disqualified, it seems. Something that he seems to have a history of. He'd been disqualified before, I believe. Biting someone, I think I heard someone say online.
Like Tyson style?
Yeah, so I think he obviously knew that he was just going to lose and decided instead of getting knocked out, I'm just going to get myself disqualified, it seemed. So it was kind of like annoying, obviously, for Schofield, someone who's been on the show, and I think somebody we both rate, because I think we would have rather have seen him put on a show and obviously, you know, get him out of there instead of obviously winning by, you know, disqualification for, you know, low blows. And he was also trying to break his arm at one point where he was trying to pull his arm out of his socket and stuff like that.
That was nuts, man.
It was a great, crazy fight to watch, to be honest with you. But, you know, I think now hopefully we can see Schofield move on to someone bigger. I know obviously he called out Jojo Diaz previously, and you know Keyshawn Davis. It's according to Jojo's account, it looks like he's fighting Oscar Duarte, but that hasn't been officially announced. So maybe Jojo's going to be busy, and you know Schofield.
Who would you want to see Schofield fight? Would you want to see him fight Jojo Diaz or Keyshawn Davis? I think a Davis fight. I'm more interested in a Davis fight, just because Jojo's been on a losing streak.
I think the Keyshawn fight, you know, could be just kind of like left to marinade, that lovely boxing term we use.
No, right. But I just like Jojo's just lost a lot of steam.
Yeah, and I think, but it's good, you know, in terms of the typical Jojo's kind of maybe over the hill and coming back down, and it would be good for Floyd to get someone like that on his ledger because he can say, hey, you know, Jojo's an ex, you know, world champion.
No, right. Yeah. I mean, it's a resume thing.
Yeah. And it's just a good test because it's, you know, that's like a slow progression. But keep, I mean, I'd accept either. You know, if you would, I wouldn't turn it down. But if you know, if I could pick, I would maybe just let like Keyshawn pick up like some type of title, or Floyd pick up a title, and then those two fight each other kind of when they've reached their prime. But yeah, if they threw it together right now, would I say no? Absolutely not.
No, of course not. Of course not. But and Schofield's what? Like, is he in early 20s?
Yeah, he's young. Still young.
Right? So obviously he's got a ton of time. But yeah, I agree. I mean, I wouldn't be against a JoJo fight or a Keyshawn fight.
He's 21.
Oh, he's even younger than I thought. He was like 23 or something. But yeah, I'd prefer a Floyd Schofield versus Keyshawn Davis fight. But you're right. I mean, do fans like the word marinate? I think it depends, because sometimes when you wait, it does, you know, like when you wait for these fights to marinate, like Pacquiao Mayweather, if they would have fought, and that's like the easiest example to make, but like they fought in 2015, if they would have fought in 2011, would they have made as much money as they did fighting 4 years later?
No, I think Floyd posted one time he could have made, I'm guessing at the minute, like 50 million, and he ended up making like 300 million or something like that.
That's nuts. That's
due
nuts.
Due to the fact that they let it grow. But then you've got the other one that we've spoken about before is, look at Amir Khan. He kind of waited for Floyd or money, waited all that time and got neither.
And isn't that crazy? I mean, he did get Canelo.
Yeah.
He did. I mean, like, you know, yeah. Khan was he was a gold medalist, right? He won the gold? Or was it silver?
No, he won the silver, yeah. And then
he won the silver.
Guy in the world.
Right, right. So in the Olympics, but you know, and he was, you know, he was an entertaining fighter. He was popular. You know, so he got eyeballs, and I think that's what helped him. You know, he had talent, obviously, but would you say that his popularity exceeded his talent?
Only because of the fact he didn't stick to game plans. He was kind of a fighter that when he got popped, he wanted to stand and bang, and he just didn't have the chin for it. But if he'd have been more disciplined and just realized how fast his hands were and how he could just get in and out, I think his resume would have been better. But then when you look at his fight with Maidana, he kind of went toe-to-toe with Maidana and managed to survive and win somehow.
So you would say that his popularity did exceed his talent?
Popularity exceeds his talent.
I think that's a pretty... That's a hard one to kind of say, isn't it?
Yeah, because he was a world champion.
Yeah, yeah. No, he was talented. Mm. But popularity, how much did his popularity play into that he got these... Like a Canelo fight. You know, he moved up. He moved up in weight.
100%, because if you look, he probably had a lot of the Brits, but due to the fact he did so well in the Olympics, and we all kind of, and he was like 16, I think, and we all kind of like fell in love with him because he was like the only boxer that went, only boxer that went, and he managed to do so well. And then right. Due to the fact, you know, of his heritage, I think a lot of the people from, you know, the Middle East also, you know, kind of gathered to him, and the fact that like he's a Muslim and stuff like that.
He had like he had two different demographics.
Yeah, kind of more, in maybe, you know, in the fact that he attracted so many people. So, maybe, I guess, and you think of it in that terms, because I'm sure he must put some great numbers for TV.
Yeah, yeah, he was popular, and I think, but he took the big fights, though. I mean, you can't really, you compare him to, like, Ryan Garcia, which is, like, you know, I think it'd be easy to say that his popularity exceeds his talent, but he knows that, and it's a leverage. It's a leverage tool in negotiations. Like it is. But Khan, see, I think like that question when you're talking about Amir Khan is a lot, you have to think about it a lot more. Because, like you said, he had the Olympic pedigree, got the silver medalist. He took big fights, Maidana, he moved it to fight Canelo. Who knocked him out?
Lamont Peterson knocked him out. He beat Maidana. He fought Malignaggi. Yeah,
I mean he had prominent fights.
Kell Brook.
So he didn't turn him down. He what?
Kell Brook was obviously his last fight, a big rivalry.
Right, right. So I mean, you know who?
Danny Garcia. Danny Garcia has knocked him out.
Danny Garcia, that's right. That's right. I mean, yeah, that's a hard one. That's a hard one. You think his popularity did exceed then? Did exceed his talent?
Maybe just, not in terms of like...
Ryan, I don't think it's that, drastic.
Yeah, it's not as drastic as that Ryan Garcia, because Ryan Garcia's never had a world title and probably never will. But he's getting...
I think he will. I think Ryan's going to have a title. In one way or another, he's going to have one.
Well, if he does, it'll be like a Broner career where they're all vacant.
You know, well, that's what I was thinking. Yeah. But...
Or WWE, yeah, I mean, or IBO.
Yeah, possibly, yeah. Yeah, I mean... Just... Yeah, that con question, that's an interesting... Did his popularity exceed his talent? Or would you say it's closer to 50-50?
That's a good Twitter question, that.
It is, huh? Maybe we should throw that up there. Yeah, that's definitely a good question to touch on. Moving on. Also this past weekend from the Resorts World Arena in Birmingham. Is it Birmingham or Birmingham?
Second one.
The second one, right? Birmingham. Because I'm pretty sure... People they get pretty pissed off. You see Birmingham, right? Like it's Alabama. It's not pronounced the same way, right?
Yeah, just kind of the Americans. That's kind of the way they say it. Yeah.
Nathan Heaney and Brad Paul's fight to a split draw for the British middleweight title. We talked about this last week. You picked Heaney to win, right?
Yeah, I thought Heaney would sneak it. I thought it was a good fight, but. On the day, I think a lot of people probably had Haney winning by maybe a round. So it was one of those ones where you saw a split draw. You're like, okay, it was close because he didn't win by 2-3 rounds. I think everyone had it, kind of like 7-5. So the fact that they got a draw means that, fingers crossed, we get to see it again. It was a good clash of styles. I thought, both men were bloodied and beaten by the end. And a good British dust up, for the British title. I'd like to see it again, like we said, like last week. Heaney's kind of outdone himself anyway, getting to, British level. He was kind of one, like we kind of just touched on, kind of a good lead-in from the question you said about Khan, where he really just had the support of, the Stoke City football fans and his entrances and so many tickets that he would sell is the reason Frank Warren picked him up, because at the end of the day, it's a business. And they tactfully kind of moved him along, and I thought, originally, the British title would be the equivalent of a world title for somebody like Nathan Heaney just due to, his skills. But then he beat Denzel Bentley quite well. Now gets a draw with Brad Paul's and maybe could have won it by a round. So, slowly but surely, they're kind of moving him along really well. But if I was them, I think I would probably just go with the rematch against Brad Paul's instead of, pushing him on to maybe, Commonwealth and maybe even European level.
You mentioned British dust up, and we talked about Khan just before. You as a Brit, using that terminology you just said, what do you think it was the most? I don't want to say popular, but maybe the biggest British dust up there's ever been as of today.
The first one that springs to mind when you asked that question was it Matthew Macklin, Jamie Moore? That was a crazy fight.
Yeah, that one, yeah.
That was a crazy
fight. I'm asking you because you're a little bit more plugged in into the UK scene, obviously. Right. So
that's the first one that sprung to mind when you said the question.
Matthew Macklin and Jamie Moore.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable fight, that.
That was when?
Oh, man, I've no idea. I'd be a guess if I told you so long ago. And I haven't seen it for many years. But when you said it, that was the first fight that sprung to mind.
Why did that one spring to mind?
Just because it was back and forth, bloodbath. One guy looked like he was going to win. They were both just exhausted and just carried on going. Just the kind of fight that you love to see. Had everything. And I'm sure there's probably Brits listening to this shouting at me saying like, this one's better, this one's better. But I didn't know you were going to ask that question. So that was the first one that came to mind. So I'm going
to
go with that.
Well, this is why people listen to us, Mike. We ask these questions. These thought-provoking questions.
You've obviously slept very well because you come out with a couple of gems tonight.
I'm trying. I'm trying to get me on my A game here. British dust up. That's another one we could put on Twitter or X.
Right.
That's another question.
Yeah.
We can put the Amir Khan one and this British dust-up one. I mean, because these are thought-provoking questions, right? That's what you want to hear.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
In the co-main event, Zach Parker gets the unanimous decision win over 10 rounds against Tyrone Zweig. Zweig, I think.
Zweig or Zuz, something like that.
Zuz. I apologize. One way or the other. Parker was down, actually, in round two, but obviously ended up getting the decision win as he survived the rest of the fight. Parker won by scores of 98-91, 96-94, and 97-92. What'd you think about this fight?
Strange fight, to be honest with you. Parker didn't really, even though you look at those scorecards, and especially the 98-91, you'd have thought kind of Parker wiped the floor with him. Wasn't really the case, to be honest with you. And Parker just, he wasn't on his A game, or maybe thought the fight was going to be easy because, you know, Tyrone came back after, like, he pretty much retired, it seemed like, over the last few years. Came back, missed weight, looked a bit flabby, obviously hadn't had the best camp, or maybe just came back simply for a good payday against Zach Parker, knocked him down in the second, and then either didn't have the gas to jump on him and try and get him out of there, or chose not to, maybe thought that he could get him out later in the rounds or something like that. Very odd type of fight, and there's just something wrong with Parker. I don't think that he's going to... Originally, when you watched him coming through the ranks, you'd probably look at him and be like, you know what? He's in a hard division, but I think there's a good chance that he's going to become a world champion. Not anymore.
You think so?
No, I don't think so. No, I think when he fought John Ryder and kind of, I know he broke his hand, but how many fighters have we seen kind of carry on with a broken hand? You know, at least go the rounds or at least try to win. Parker just kind of gave up against John Ryder when he had that. And then in this fight, he just didn't look as good as he should have done, you know, fighting somebody that's was pretty much sat on the sofa for the last few years.
How old is he?
Parker?
Yeah.
I think he's around 30. I think he still has a couple of years left in him, but he just seems...
I mean, at 24-1, you still have some time.
Yeah, no, he does. He just doesn't seem to have evolved and kind of like have moved on. And there's just something about him which is just kind of off. I don't know whether he's just one of those guys that kind of like wants to be a boxer, but... when he gets in the ring and someone's kind of hard, he kind of like is like, oh, this is harder than I thought. And he kind of like wilts under the pressure, or he doesn't want to put the effort in. He's kind of like one of those guys that kind of like has all the skills, but just doesn't have the grit and the determination to get any further. He kind of like, he likes to be a big, big fish in the small pond and just wants to kind of like beat up all the guys that are lesser than him. You know, like if he gets, it looks like he's this type of guy that if he just gets into a hard fight, he's just like, oh no, fuck this. And he'll just like kind of like fake an injury and get out of there. Which kind of sounds a bit harsh, but that's just kind of the persona that you get from him. And you know, I've never interviewed him, never spoke to him, but that's just the kind of from watching from afar, that's just what he gives off. And I could be totally wrong, but
we gotta get him on now so you can confront him.
Yeah, I'll be sick that week after saying that. Yeah,
probably. It's gonna have to be me to interview him. But when you said that in terms of you know, it kind of strikes you as that he gets into the ring and sometimes he's like, ah, do I really want to do this? Like, it's harder than I thought. I don't, it made me think of Miguel Cotto. I don't know if you ever saw the interview. And he said it in a couple different interviews, but the one I thought about was he was doing an HBO face off when they face off before the fight with the opponent. He might have been fighting Canelo or it might have been Floyd Mayweather. I don't know. It was one of them. It was one of those high-profile fights for him. You know what? It might have been Sergio Martinez. Martinez says that he's like going... like he's. I don't know if he's the one who said that he's willing to die in the ring.
Yeah.
To win the fight against Cotto. Like he was willing to die and, you know, throw his... life on the line. And then Max Kellerman asked Cotto the same question or similar, and Cotto's like, that's stupid, that's a stupid answer. And he says, like, why would I do that? He's like, this is just my job. Like, and then he goes on to like kind of detail, like, this is just my job, you know, I have a family, you know, kids. He's like, this is, I just come here, like, this is my work. Like, but, you know, he had big fights. He was popular and he had big fights, you know. And I mean, I don't think anybody would disagree that a lot of the big fights that he had, he didn't. I mean, he won the Martinez fight, but Martinez was obviously injured. But he still won the fight. He beat Margarito the second time, so that was a good revenge one. But I mean, he lost to Floyd, he lost to Canelo. But he was always the guy who was involved in those big events. So do you think maybe Parker is kind of like a Cotto in a way? Not like a direct comparison, but in terms of like, maybe he looks at it like that. Oh, it's just my job. And maybe that affects it. I don't think it affected Cotto like that. I'm not saying that Cotto thought the same way. Like, oh, he got in there. He's like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore. But you think Zach Parker might have that same mentality? He's like, oh, it's just my job.
Yeah, he must. I think so. In some shape or form, he has a similar outlook than that. Yeah, just from, you know, recent performances.
I mean, what do you think about that, though? Like, that's another thought-provoking question. Fighters who say, oh, this is just my job. Like, they obviously do it. They obviously have the passion, the wherewithal to get into it and start doing that for some type of living or for a living. But then they're like, yeah, it's just my job. But they'll still do it and go for it.
I think it kind of varies person to person, right? I think somebody, for like Canelo's mentality, you know, they could kind of survive that, like kind of, okay, this is my job, but it pays super, super well. But there'll also be other people where, you know, they fall out of love with it, but then their performances drop. But I think it's obviously, you know, like person to person is very different, especially like when you can fall out of love with something like football, like, or soccer,
yeah,
it's called over here, and you can still play. But when you're kind of falling out of love with boxing and you have to get up and do all that training and also get punched in the face and your chance of injury is very high, it's very different, very different. You have to have a different type of mentality to do that. Just due to the fact that you're taking off most of your clothes, you're sticking on a pair of shorts, and you're fighting to potentially injury or death in the ring in front of millions of people.
Yeah.
Boxers are very different. They're just made different.
That's true. Moving on that card, Dennis McCann gets the 12-round unanimous decision win against Brad Strand, who takes the first loss of his career. This was the British and Commonwealth Super Bantamweight Championship. What did you think about this fight?
I thought McCann looked good. I thought he'd come back, because I know obviously some people were saying that his recent performances weren't the best, but I think he's, you know, maybe, I know he'd been around a few different gyms. He came over to America, was training with Ricky Funes for a short period of time, went back to the UK. But I think in slowly but surely, he's kind of changing to a more professional style. I think he's kind of sitting down on his punches a lot more. And I thought this was a good victory for him. I'm a big fan of, you know, Dennis McCann. I think he's all round, seems to be very good. Just, you know, his ring entrances, he kind of like understands PR, you know, with his Dennis the Menace and like kind of always eating Haribos after the fight and stuff like that, which is, you know, good. And, you know, could potentially be like a sponsorship opportunity for him if he gets himself, you know, onto the world level. So I think he's really good. I think the slowly but surely the moving in, which was good, because he was another one, like you said earlier, like originally I think he kind of hit the scene and people were kind of comparing him to Prince Nazim, but he wasn't really there yet. So it was kind of good. I think that Frank Warren probably saw that, didn't move him too quickly, where he ended up taking a loss. Because, you know, what's this now? His 16th fight, is that right? Yeah, 16,
I think so.
15 wins and one draw. And he's only just kind of getting to British level. Well, British and Commonwealth level. So I think he's been moved very well so far. And, you know, fingers crossed, I think he could be hopefully another big name out of the UK, because I think we're kind of lacking, you know, ever since the Khan Froch era. I don't think we have as many, because, you know, I think we spoke about it before. At one time, I think we had 13 world champions, you know, in the UK. So we're very far behind at the minute.
You think there's a difference between British and Commonwealth level, or is it the same?
It's funny how we talk about the British a lot more than we talk about the Commonwealth.
Well, yeah, that's why I asked it, because I was like, we talk about the British.
I would say so, yeah. A lot of people kind of talk about the British, and I think it's just the fact it's kind of very similar in style to the ring. And I think it looks, you know, very, very looks nice on the mantelpiece, because, you know, it's very rare to hear someone say, like, oh, I really want to win a Commonwealth title. It's always,
I'm sure people have said it.
Say again?
Somebody said it.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure somebody said it, but the British is kind of the one that everyone tries to win, you know, get the three victories, I think it is now. So you get to keep the belt and then obviously stick that on the mantelpiece.
Yeah, that's true. Also on the card, Joe Joyce, heavyweight, returns. A little bit lower on the card than usual. He's usually headlining most. It's probably been the first time he hasn't headlined an event, I'm assuming, in a while. Gets the 10th round K over Cash Ali. Cash Ali, I'm sorry. Did he convince you that he's back in contention with this KO? I mean, no. He got the win.
No, not at all. I mean, he got the victory. He came in super heavy, like 286 pounds, which I think was the heaviest of his career so far. And it was, unfortunately, it's just the same things. It's, lack of defense, lack of head movement. We know that he has the power, but he kind of struggled to get Cash Ali out of there. But Cash Ali is a kind of a journeyman sparring partner, so he's seen everything. Cash Ali's been in there with everybody, Joe Joyce, I assume, Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua, all the big guys. So you do wonder, did Joe Joyce and Cash Ali kind of slip into like a sparring mode? And that's why it was kind of slow, methodical. And, it took Joe Joyce so long to get Cash Ali out of there. But yeah, definitely wasn't the performance. I'm sure they thought to themselves, we'll bring Joe Joyce back, lower down on the card. Let's get him like an easy knockout so we can, get back into the mix. Like we said last week, the heavyweight division, thanks to, Uncle Turkey out in Saudi, he's throwing so much money at the heavyweight division because obviously they're the fights that a lot of people want to watch. So it was kind of like an opportunity missed there because you really wanted to get in there, knock Cash Ali out as quick as you can, make a statement, get yourself one of those big paydays out in Saudi Arabia. And I probably think that would be it. I think Joe Joyce after facing Zhang and obviously having an injury the first time, getting knocked out badly the second time, I think he was hoping that he could just get Cash Ali out of there, get a Saudi payday, and then I think that he probably would have retired.
I mean, if Zhang, they said him and Joseph Parker, like there's a rematch clause, right? So
yeah,
if Zhang fights Parker in the next couple months and loses again for some reason, do we see a trifecta between Joyce and Zhang?
If Zhang wins, I could see that. If it's doing good numbers.
No, but what if he loses?
If Zhang loses again?
To Parker, yeah.
I think that would be it for... I think Zhang might stay around because, he's not had too many... Well, he's never been knocked out.
Right.
And obviously he's older and the heavyweight division's just on fire. So I think if he could get in there with some more paydays, why wouldn't you? Whereas Joe Joyce, the problem about Joe Joyce is he takes so much punishment every time. Like he's fighting Cash Ali.
The juggernaut.
Yeah, I mean the big juggernaut, but eventually that's going to catch up with you. Maybe 5-10 years from now is when you see it. But it's not healthy to take all those hits to the head. And unfortunately he has zero defense. So even someone like Cash Ali was just throwing big right hands over the top and was connecting with him. Luckily for Joe Joyce, Ali doesn't have the sort of power Zhang has. So, for his own safety, his own health, you think that maybe a couple more fights and hopefully he's made enough money to, kind of sail off into the sunset and, do something else.
Also this past weekend, this past Sunday, the 17th of March from the Royal Theater in Castlebar, Ireland. Did I say that right? Castlebar?
Mm-hmm.
In Ireland, Dillian White, another heavyweight matchup. Dillian White gets the victory over Christian Hammer. This fight wasn't broadcasted anywhere, right? It might have been broadcasted locally somewhere in the country of Ireland, but it didn't have like a global broadcast partner, right?
No. There are only two fights really on the card that would be kind of interesting, I guess, for, international people. So obviously, they're both on here, Dillian White fighting and Gary Spike O'Sullivan were the only two names that most people would know, boxing fans like us over in the US. So yeah, just kind of like a slow comeback, I guess, for Dillian White.
Maybe he's just trying to get back into the win column to kind of, like you said earlier with Joe Joyce, like You don't think all these heavyweights are trying to get these Saudi paydays? You know, like, hey, if I can just build my name enough so I can get a piece of the pie over there, right?
100%. We would. I'm sure everyone, I'm sure, is trying to get those big paydays. But obviously, the heavyweight paydays are just the heavyweight money. Heavyweight money.
Right. I mean, where does he go from here? Does he fight like another interim fight like this to try to keep his momentum going? Or do you see him trying to, you know, put his way into like a prominent fight? I mean, obviously that's going to be the goal, but what happens here with Dillian White?
He said in an interview that, you know, he's looking at, I think, you know, between 4 to 6 fights. And then I think he said he wanted to retire. Obviously, I still think we'll see Joshua and Dillian White again, because, you know, White won in the amateurs, AJ won in the pros, so the kind of one for one, right?
And I guess, yeah.
When he tested positive this time around, it was in preparation for that fight against AJ. So I think we'll probably see that. I think just due to the beef that you can get between them, the build-up will be good. I think, you know, AJ said that he would actually fight him, so.
Yeah, maybe. In the co-main event, like you mentioned, Sofyan Khaty gets the victory over Gary Spike O'Sullivan. Like you said, Gary Spike O'Sullivan, did he fight Triple G, or was his name just mentioned or fight Triple G? I forgot. He fought Triple G, didn't he?
His record today. Did he fight Triple G? He fought a whole host of people, though.
No, I know. But I remember he got a lot of publicity around Triple G when Triple G was fighting a lot in Southern California. And I remember Spike O'Sullivan. I remember meeting him. And then people, because his name was being mentioned, meeting him at the StubHub Center in Carson, California, the War Grounds. And he was there wearing like a suit. I think it was like a white suit with his glasses, with his mustache all curled up like Captain Hook. And people were like, oh, Spike, O'Sullivan. Like, he was getting a lot of attention. But his name was getting mentioned a lot alongside Triple G and, you know, all this stuff. Because, you know, he had like kind of like a semi, you know, portion of a backing. Did he fight Triple G?
The biggest fights that he's had. Triple G, no. Erisandi Lara, Jaime Munguia, David Lemieux, and Chris Eubank Jr. Billy Joe Saunders as well.
So he fought some pretty, he had some pretty prominent fights, right?
Yeah, obviously before he took this loss on the weekend 2 years ago, May the 28th, 2022, he was TKO loss to Erisandi Lara. And that was surprisingly for the WBA World Middleweight title.
Yeah. So Spike O'Sullivan taking another loss. I see how much further he goes. Moving on to fight previews. This upcoming Saturday, the 23rd of March, from the Sheffield Arena on DAZN. Dalton Smith, 15-0, goes up against Jose Chon Zepeda, 37-4. This is for the vacant WBC silver lightweight title. What do you think about this fight? Silver lightweight title. Didn't we talk about Isaac Cruz having this?
Yeah, exactly.
It's whatever, man. So what do you think about this fight?
It's a good matchup. It's just I'm just looking at, you know, what does Zepeda have left? You know, we saw him in with Regis Progre, and I was disappointed in his performance. I thought Regis Progre kind of won that, you know, pretty handedly, really. I thought Zepeda would have given him some hard work that night, but, you know, he didn't at all. So it's kind of really, what does Zepeda have left? If Zepeda can roll back the years, I think it's going to be a very, very close fight. I think Dalton Smith, this is a good fight for him to kind of break out on the world stage, just due to the fact of, you know, Zepeda's fairly big name over here in the US, especially in the, you know, Southern California he is. I think Dalton Smith probably wins, and I think he probably...
I think it's an interesting fight.
No, it is. I think Smith wins on points. But if Zepeda can roll back, and that was just a bad performance and a bad stylistic matchup against Regis Progre, I think it could be super, super close.
I think this is going to be, yeah. You know what? I think Zepeda takes it.
It's one of those things, isn't it? Is we just don't know. Like, does he still have the drive? You know,
no, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's
I think he takes it. I think he takes it.
It's a close fight, dude, because me and you were big fans of Zepeda.
Yeah, I think Zepeda's obviously his experience. Like, he's been in harder fights. He's been in high profile fights, more competitive fights. He's more than double the fights that Dalton Smith has. You know, and you've said it, like, it's you know, sometimes it's hard for these British fighters to come over. And
it's opposite. He's coming to Sheffield, didn't he?
Well, yeah. Well, if you look at it like that, but how many times has Eddie Hearn brought these fighters from like Mexico or something? And Zepeda's Mexican American, I believe. He was born in the United States, but, you know, still Mexican pedigree. But how many times has Eddie Hearn primarily brought these opponents from, you know, Latin America or Mexico or anything like that to the UK, and they've upset the A-side fighter that he has, right?
Yeah, 100%. A lot of those, though, I would say are heavy-handed.
Well, I kind of look at it the same here. I think Zepeda might be on the same track here.
Two losses in his last three.
No, right. You're right.
Regis Progre, and then he came back and beat Nerat Goyat, and then he lost also September last year to Richardson Hitchens. That was a unanimous decision.
Yeah, I think Zepeda takes this one. But it is intriguing. Like you said, like, oh, you know, Dalton Smith, should be his toughest test to date. The winner, I guess, gets a piece of the silver lightweight title, even though Isaac Cruz is fighting in like less than 2 weeks. I don't get it. So
it's going to be interesting, because I know in the UK, and you know, Eddie Hearn has said in interviews before how good Dalton Smith is. So really, this is the stage for him to show everybody. This really is kind of like a showcase fight. And like we touched on earlier when we were talking about, you know, like JoJo potentially fighting, you know, Floyd Schofield, this is very similar. It's kind of like, okay, Dalton Smith, like, this is your time to show you're going to be facing someone like Zepeda, who's been in there with a whole host of names. And I think me and you both agree, probably should have beat Jose Ramirez that night if it wasn't in Jose Ramirez's backyard. So, yeah, showcase, breakout fight for, you know, Dalton Smith, hopefully.
Also on that card, Sandy Ryan, 6-1-1, goes up against Terry Harper. It's for the WBO welterweight title. And also James Flint, 13-1-2, goes up against Campbell Hatton, 14-0, for the British Central Area Super Lightweight. What? Yes, is that new? Yeah. Is that new?
We don't normally put those on here, but due to the fact he's got Campbell Hatton in, I was like, you know what, I'm going to stick that on there. But yeah, they do have like a northern area, southern area, central area, which is obviously lower than, you know, England. And then obviously you get British
Central Area Super Lightweight title.
Yes, sir.
What a mouthful that is, huh? Like, I don't even know what to say to that. I don't even know. That definitely caught me off guard. Campbell Hatton, 14-0. I mean, where are they navigating him to? What do you think is going on with him?
I think a fight like this against someone with a record like this is kind of answers the question that you just said, right? Because obviously when you start your career, you kind of go in there against, you know, people that really are there for you to beat. So I think this time around, you know, for Campbell Hatton, it's like, okay, this guy's got a winning record. This guy's coming to win. You know, what could Campbell Hatton do? And I think this will probably answer a lot of that. So I think, you know, they're moving him slowly. You know, obviously, you know, it's 14 professional fights. This being his 15th. So I think
if Hatton can maintain or sustain any type of, you know, victories and talent going forward, and get that British backing like his dad had, and end up getting into, that's huge, man. I mean, like, who coming up right now would you say, like, still has a shot to, like, get that fan base and that support that Ricky Hatton had?
Nobody.
I mean, it's him, right? I mean, that's his son. Look, they look like each other.
Yeah, I guess if anybody has the chance to kind of repeat that, maybe his son.
I mean, look at Chavez Jr. Like, yeah. Even though, like, he didn't win a lot of the big fights, he, when he fought Canelo, there was a lot of people behind him for that fight, even though he didn't kind of really give the performance that he should have or people wanted to see. Chavez Jr., and then when he knocked down Martinez, even though he lost that fight too, like, that kind of gave him some more credibility. Like, he had some type of fan base, you know, but a lot of it had to do was because of his dad. You know, people are like, oh, that's his son. Yeah, Chavez. Hatton can do that. Like, how big would that be for the sport? I'm not even talking about, like, British boxing. I'm talking about for, you know, like, who's going to take over the mantle for somebody like Anthony Joshua when Anthony Joshua retires?
I mean, it's rare, isn't it, to see that, you know, to have somebody so popular that people will spend thousands of dollars to fly from the UK to Vegas, you know, to watch him, you know, look at, you know, Hatton, what he did in the Vegas Strip.
That was huge.
In two fights he lost.
Yeah.
Mayweather and Pacquiao.
Yeah, but they were huge, man. He literally fought the biggest stars at the time.
The only time the MGM Grand has run out of alcohol.
Isn't that insane?
That is insane.
That's insane. They're shipping
it in from other hotels because it was, they drank them dry.
That is insane. I wonder ever since then when they're getting a lot of British fans, like they're expecting a lot of British fans, or even just in general, doesn't matter for the event, that they have like, hey, we have to have bigger stocks here because this cannot happen again.
Insane.
They drank the place dry, man.
That, you know, that's kind of, I don't know if we'll see something like that. You know, the closest is probably someone like Conor McGregor, and he's not a boxer.
That's insane. Moving on to news and notes section of this week's episode of the Last Round Podcast. It was reported during the last couple days or so that DAZN has split with their now former CEO, Joe Markowski, who's been there pretty much since the beginning. And I think he got like a promotion in the last couple of years to the CEO. He started, I think, as a lower executive, most recently being the CEO of the company. Was this writing on the wall? You know, when you see these big companies, essentially, especially these big companies, when the CEO goes away, you know, isn't the writing on the wall? You know, the even though DAZN's not a public company, they've been raising their prices, you know, at least over here in the United States. I'm sure they raise it in the UK, but over here in the United States, I think it's now $29.99 a month, $30 a month. Yeah. And it started like at what, $10 a month, I think, over here? Or
I think it was like less.
$8 maybe? I
think it was $8, yeah.
Yeah. Was the writing on the wall here for a while?
I think they just massively, unless it was just a ploy to drag us all in by starting so low and saying stuff like, you know,
that's a business tactic.
Yeah, yeah. But I mean, like, you know, also saying like the pay-per-view is dead. So we were kind of like, oh, wow. Like, obviously $8 starting is super cool. We all knew it was going to go up, you know, to probably like 20. I thought eventually it was going to reach somewhere like that. But I think he may have just massively underestimated what you could do in boxing by not having a pay-per-view because, you know, after a while they realized, like, hey, we can't afford to do Canelo. We can't afford to do AJ without, you know, having pay-per-view because those are stars, you know, huge.
Yeah, I think they overpaid. In the first couple of years, they overpaid because, you know, they're owned by that Russian guy. Or he's Bulgarian or something like that. And he's a billionaire. So they were overpaying these fighters like, hey, no pay-per-view, but we're going to pay you guys overpay to try to corner the market. And then they realized that it wasn't sustainable. They're like, hey, we're spending way too much money and we're not making any profit here. So their plan didn't work. And then they tried out, oh, pay-per-view is dead. And they thought they could corner the market. I think there was an interview once where Joe Markowski and then another person from DAZN were giving once, and then the guy next to Joe Markowski was like, pretty much said like, I don't know what his exact words were, but he kind of said like, yeah, we're going to keep outspending people. And then we're going to keep doing it until they run out of money. And then we have the money. There's a clip out there. And I remember Markowski's face, like he doesn't really acknowledge it. And he just kind of just stays like stone faced. And then he like answers the other part of the question. But the guy he was with, and I'm sure it was another DAZN employee at the time, he was like, yeah, we're just going to keep spending money until the others run out of money. And obviously it didn't really work out like that. I mean, they're still around, so, you know, but they probably lost a lot of money because, you know, it just didn't work out. So, I mean, I'm surprised it took this long, but like, I know they announced another person who was obviously internal to go up to the CEO position. I don't think he's as known because Markowski, you know, think about it. DAZN started with the former head of ESPN, I think, John Skipper.
Yeah.
They hired him to be the CEO and that didn't work out. And then I think somebody else stepped in and I forgot who it was, but that didn't work out. And then Joe Markowski was elevated and he became the CEO. And obviously that didn't work out. So what's the plan here? Here in the United States, they're charging $30 a month, you know, like, and they had to transition to the pay-per-view game because, you know, I think like a lot of people, Canelo was mostly who forced their hand. I think he's like, oh, like you guys, you know, if you guys want to try to pay me, you guys have to do pay-per-view. So, I mean, what happened? What's the future in DAZN here? In, let's just say by 2030, in the next 6 years, is DAZN still around?
Yeah, because I think it's just so successful, so successful in other areas. You know, I think it's been in Italy and Germany and places like that for a long time. So I'm assuming that, you know, in the UK and in the US, they can kind
of... But are they making enough money to sustain the other parts of their business?
I mean, I don't know. I know the guy who owns it's like a billionaire, so I'm sure.
No, right. I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, when you have that much money, like, you could be... I remember Oscar De La Hoya once talking about somebody asked him about, like, hey, Golden Boy's lost a lot of fighters. You know, you guys don't have a Canelo anymore, stuff like that. Like, you know, like, are you thinking about selling the company? You know, what about business? And De La Hoya, I think, even said, he's like, he's like, I've been around this sport for a long time and, you know, as a promoter now for a long time. He's like, I think he said something along the lines of, like, you know, even if the business side did go down, his own personal net worth and wealth, he's doing so well, he can just transfer some of his personal funds to the business and it's fine. He kind of said something like that. And I remember saying that. I was like, okay. Like, I mean, when you have that much money and you might be losing money, you're like, oh, well, I have so much money already. Like, I can still sustain it. You know? Like, the losses don't really affect you.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean...
Well, to answer your
question. But like they've already lost a lot of subscribers. I'm assuming, you know, just based on the social media pulse and taking the temperature on social media, $30 a month is a lot out here. Like, especially when you compare everything else to other streaming apps, it's a lot.
They need over here in the U.S. They need a selection of NBA, baseball, American football, hockey, WWE. If they're going to stick, obviously, just to sports, like they seem to, they need to get something like that. And then, obviously, in the UK, the be-all and end-all is soccer, football.
I wonder, we talk about WWE. They announced their Netflix deal for their Monday Night Raw show, which starts next year. You think, and I'm pretty sure it's a yes, but do you think DAZN, you think they had talked to DAZN, WWE, when they were negotiating for a streamer? You think DAZN tried to make a pitch?
After moving here and seeing one time the amount of views that the WWE does on a consistent basis, you'd be stupid not to.
Yeah. I would think DAZN made a pitch, right? Like, why not?
You'd be silly not to.
You know? Because, like, even if they didn't get it, it's like, okay. Yeah, that's interesting, man. But, like, you know, DAZN needs to find, like, they're raising their prices. Like, you know, they don't have the consistent... I mean, they put out good fights, but like, I don't know what their I know at one point or another, maybe there was reported that whatever the subscriber base is, but it doesn't seem like it's that sustainable or profitable for the business. You know,
they need to pick up some of those spots. Like I said, didn't they pick up like MLB highlights?
Did they? I'm not sure. I don't know.
I think they did a while back. I mean, I only really ever watch it when a fight's on. I just click go on it, click the reminder. It'll send me a message to my phone like, hey, so-and-so fight's about to start. And then I'll turn it on my phone and watch it.
Right.
You know, that's what you need. And then you need shoulder programming. You need a channel. Obviously, it's an app, but you need to be able to watch it 24/7. You need to have shoulder right. programming, a back catalog, live right. events, different types of sports. So it caters for, you know, all different people, because obviously when it opened up over here, it was just boxing. And then eventually they've added other things, but the stuff that it has so far, if I remember correctly, it has like darts, which obviously isn't huge over here. Then they have like foreign soccer, you know, foreign football, which I don't think many people were watching in the US. So,
you know what also hurts them though? Spots. You know what also hurts them though is that whenever they have like an event, obviously they're a streamer, whether it's a pay-per-view event or a stream, but primarily a pay-per-view event, there's always issues. Well, at least from some people, like that it blacked out the screen or something happened. Like whenever there's big pay-per-views that they've done for fights, especially like the Canelo ones, which they've had a lot. Obviously Canelo's done a lot of pay-per-views for DAZN. And I've had like family and friends tell me like, hey, what, the pay-per-view's on DAZN, like how do I get DAZN and stuff. I've always told friends and family, I was like, don't get it on DAZN, get it on your satellite or cable provider. Like they should be a partnership there, because they, when they do pay-per-view, they do it on their streamer, which is their DAZN broadcast platform, but they also offer it on satellite and cable over here in the United States. I'm not sure if they did over there, and I'm assuming they do over there in the UK, but because the broadcast feed is a lot more reliable through satellite and cable over here, I've always encouraged people, like when they ask about it, like, oh, how do I buy on DAZN? I was like, don't. You can just go on your pay-per-view channels on your cable or satellite box and just order it from there. Like the signal is going to be a lot more reliable. I've always told people that. You know, because it is, you know, from people we've seen online complaining about signals and stuff like that.
Hey, pay-per-view.com, Danny, do you use that?
Actually, I never have. I've never used it. So I can't really talk about it because I've never used it. Moving on. Ryan Garcia said this past weekend that the New York State Athletic Commission wants him to undergo a mental health evaluation before his April 20th fight against Devin Haney for the WBC junior welterweight title. He has deleted the video that he posted where he said this. So, I mean, what's going on here? And there's a quote. He did say, quote, is it not my U.S. constitutional right to have free speech? So because I'm tweeting what I'm tweeting, that promises for a mental evaluation? That's curious. End quote. That's what he said. I mean, think about it like this. Maybe in a reasonable fashion here. If you're the State Athletic Commission, who's supposed to look out for the well-being and, you know, of the fighters of the event, and you let Garcia fight and something bad happens, or he, you know, something bad happens after the fight, hopefully not, you know, who are they going to come after? Big Brother, which is the promoters, and the State Athletic Commission, which is a public government agency. Like, hey, you guys should have did something. I think from an authority standpoint, I don't think you can reasonably disagree with this, with New York State Athletic Commission to request this, right?
I'll take the side of Ryan Garcia for the debate. But if they give him an extra test that's not normally given to other people, I'm sure, and they cancel the fight and say that they're scared of his mental health, I'm sure he'll then sue them for whatever his purse is going to be. Because why?
Yeah, I can see that.
Why is he getting this extra mental health test when everyone else never does, because that's not something that you normally do. Obviously, you take a normal medical, and then I think in New York and California, you take it's more to do with like remembering things and stuff like that, where you do like a computer and you have to remember numbers and sequences and stuff like that. And it's more to do with your brain, because it'll be like, okay, this is Danny's score on his first ever fight. And then when you get to fight 20, if there's a severe deterioration in your score, they'll then say like, hey, okay, you know, you need an extra brain scan, or you need this, that, and the other. But going for a talk with someone in a psychological test about all the stuff that he's posted on Twitter, and then they ban him, rightly or wrongly, I'm sure he'll turn around and sue them for loss of earnings of 10, 20, 30 million, whatever this fight's
going to be. Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean,
I'm just playing to kind of debate with you.
I mean, how many fighters have, you know, I mean, it also comes to that Ryan has a big footprint, and his tweeting and his social posts the last couple of weeks have gotten the attention of mainstream, you know, independent news, YouTube news, bloggers and stuff like that. People outside of the boxing sphere, influencers, he's gotten their attention. So if Ryan, let me ask you this, if this didn't blow up as it did, and it stayed within the boxing circle generally, would New York have still requested this? Or because it got so many eyeballs, they're like, oh, there's too much publicity, we got to do something.
100% it's due to the publicity. I believe Mauricio Sulaiman and the WBC actually reached out to them. I think I saw something like that on Twitter, and this is kind of where it came from.
The WBC requested it?
I believe so. I think I saw that the other day. I think Mauricio...
You know what? So we should be blaming the WBC here.
We should always blame the WBC.
So they're the ones, allegedly, from what you're saying.
I'm just going to check now. I think Mauricio posted it.
I can see that. I mean, the boxing sanctioning body is obviously a lot more plugged into the sport. I can see that. I can understand that. What are you finding right now?
He's posted a lot, so I have to scroll all the way back. But
he's He's definitely a tweeter, isn't he?
I'm pretty sure that he posted something along the lines of that he was...
Maybe he deleted it.
He's probably deleted it.
He probably deleted it. Somebody told him, like, hey, that's medical information.
But I'm pretty sure that he posted something along those lines that he was going to request extra things.
I mean, think about it. He's tweeting about medical information, technically. So somebody probably told him, like, hey, don't do that. Like, it's not a good idea.
Yeah, I can't see it on there, but I'm 90% sure that I saw that he posted something, or the WBC posted something saying that he was going to request extra things for this fight due to what Ryan was posting. But I can't find it, so I may be wrong. I may have dreamt it, or he's deleted it.
You might have dreamt it. You might have dreamt it. Also, the Josh Taylor-Jack Catterall rematch has been postponed for a third time. Third time, Mike. Josh Taylor underwent a procedure on his eye last month, pushing the fight off its intended April 27th date. The fight is now being rebooked for May 25th. Matchroom Boxing announced last week. It will still take place in Leeds, England, and will be streamed on ESPN Plus in the United States and DAZN, and on DAZN in the UK. Third time? A third time this has been postponed? What is going on here? Like, what is going on?
I think it's just one of those cursed fights, isn't it? Where, you know, people just keep getting injured. And, you know, is it one of those fights that we just have to be like, you know what? Like, this is a cursed fight, and I don't think we're unfortunately going to see it. But it looks like it's obviously just been put back, you know, until May. So, you know, fingers crossed we get to see it, because, you know, it was a decent fight the first time around. Obviously, there's some real spite between them. They don't like each other. So I think it'll be a good fight if and when we ever get to see it.
You would think. And then also, maybe some boxing fans might be pissed off that we're doing this, but Nate Diaz and Jorge Masvidal from the UFC will fight again on June 1st at the Kia Forum here in the Los Angeles, California area in a boxing match. Obviously, they fought in the UFC a couple years back at Madison Square Garden. I mean, this is a boxing match, so I mean, we'll see. And do we know if this is an exhibition or is this a real sanctioned fight?
From what I've looked at, it looks like it's going to be a real sanctioned fight. So it's going to be interesting. I'd be interested to see what type of card it's going to be on. Is it going to be under Masvidal's Game Bread Promotions, which
I'm sure it is.
I assume.
Sure. Yeah.
But it's going to be local to us, Danny, Southern California.
Yeah. I'm really interested to see how it performs in like the gate and the attendance. That's going to be very, very interesting. And then also probably the biggest news of the last couple of days, Tim Tszyu will now defend his WBO junior middleweight title at 154 pounds against Sebastian Fondora, reportedly, at least as of today, on March 30th, which is still a little less than 2 weeks, in Las Vegas, in the main event of PBC's inaugural pay-per-view on Prime Video. This is according to ESPN, and then obviously other sources chimed in as well. Keith Thurman has reportedly suffered a biceps injury in training. So he had to back out. And now it throws Fondora in there. I mean, how good is this for, you know, PBC? They were already getting some criticism because it was on pay-per-view. And then it was, you know, Tim Tszyu and then Tim Tszyu against Keith Thurman. Keith Thurman hasn't fought in how long? Tim Tszyu is not really known in the United States. And this was the inaugural event for Amazon Prime and it's on pay-per-view. I mean, how do you look at this recent event unfolding like this? What do you think?
I mean, I think it would have been good to have maybe had somebody on standby just due to the fact that, you know, Keith Thurman.
Fondora hasn't won. He's coming off a loss. And I'm almost, well, I think I read that 51 weeks or how many weeks?
Like, yeah, correct. It was April 8th. So yeah, nearly a year.
Yeah.
So what do you expect? Keith Thurman's been out of the ring for what, like 2 years? Obviously, he's like everybody else. He's not getting any younger. So, you know, to get, you know, an injury in camp. Yeah. You know, what's he been doing? Has he been training? Has he been just been living the life? You know, just relaxing. So obviously, you know, getting back in there and doing a camp, you know, something's going to pull, strain, all those sorts of things, just getting back into camp like that. So, I mean, it's going to be a good fight. Tim Tszyu and Fondora, before Fondora lost to Brian Mendoza.
Do you think this is a more competitive fight than Thurman?
100%.
Yeah? I mean, 100%. Fondora has been more active, even though he's been out for a year.
I think if Fondora hasn't been affected by that vicious knockout that I was there for, I think he beats him.
This is an intriguing fight, right? You're right, though, because like we haven't seen Fondora in almost a year since he lost to, was it Mendoza?
Brian Mendoza, yeah.
Right? Yeah. Isn't he on the card, too?
I have the card here. Just give me 1 second.
I think he's on the card, too, isn't he?
Correct. So the card so far is Tim Tszyu, Fondora, Rolly Romero against Isaac Cruz, Erizandi Lara against Michael Zarafa, and then Brian Mendoza against Shiri Boachuk.
Yeah. So that Boachuk, that's, he's a Tom Loeffler fighter. 360 Promotions. Yeah, I mean, think about it like that though. Look at Mendoza. Like, I wonder how Mendoza and his camp feel. I mean, obviously Fondora is you know, more well known, so in terms of marquee, that's why they threw him in there. But like, if you were Mendoza in his camp, you're like, "What? I beat that guy. Why don't you give me the shot to fight Tim Tszyu? Wouldn't you think like that?"
Well, he lost to him, didn't he?
Mendoza
lost to Tim Tszyu, October.
Oh, they fought already
in Australia.
Oh, wow.
That's who Tim Tszyu.
Oh, because they wanted Fondora to fight Tszyu after, and Fondora lost. That's right. Man, I apologize for that mistake. So, I mean, do you think if Mendoza hadn't fought Tim Tszyu yet and he was still on a winning streak, then they would have gave this spot to Mendoza, or do you think they just would have canceled the event?
would have made sense, right? You know, to get him in there.
Because... it would have made sense, but like the first fight with a new broadcaster and Amazon, you know, seemingly it's like, hey, let's see how you perform.
Yeah, I mean, they're both good fights. You know, Tim Zhu, Mendoza would have been good just due to Mendoza's power. I think Tim Zhu against the Tower in Inferno is going to be good because Fundora was just on a streak of battering people. And then obviously the announcement that was made literally 1 minute before we pressed record, the winner of this, supposedly, according to the WBO.
Supposedly.
Has to get into purse bids, mandatory talks to fight Terence Crawford.
Yeah. Yeah, 5 days after this fight, supposedly, the WBO said that negotiations have to start and they have to fight Terence Crawford, who's currently the mandatory within 180 days, which is 6 months. Still a long time. So, I mean, you know, negotiations have to start 5 days after. What does that mean? Like, right. Oh, you just have to send a text message or an email like, hey, let's start. And then... in 4 months, you reach back out like, hey, I'm following up. Let's make a deal. Technically, you started the negotiations, right? I mean, I don't know. I don't think if Crawford literally waits 6 months to fight, to get this fight done, Crawford needs to fight, man. I know he was kind of probably tied legally from the contract rematch thing from Spence and PBC, but I think Crawford needs to get back out there, man. He's lost a lot of momentum ever since that Spence win. He has so much momentum in that fight. Yeah, he was all over the place with that win, and he's lost a lot of momentum. So he needs to figure it out. Get back 100%. Out there.
It seems at times Terrence's valuation of himself just doesn't meet what valuations promoters put on certain fights, unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Bob Arum was the one who even said that. He was just like, yeah, he's like, I lose money on his fights. I was like, damn. I was like, that's hardcore to say about your fighter. I mean, but he came out and said it. You know, he's just like, you know, he's pretty much saying that, like, he's like, I overpay him. You know?
He'd say something on the lines of like, with the amount of money I've lost on Terrence, I could have bought a nice house in Los Angeles.
In L.A., yeah. Yeah, and I'm sure he already has a nice house in L.A., which is crazy. But yeah, that's nuts, man. So, I mean... yeah, that just throws another wrench into this PBC Prime pay-per-view partnership. Like, I'm sure Amazon is like, oh, thanks. Like, what's going on here? You know? And I wonder, and you would think Amazon had all the leverage in this deal. And there's probably a clause in there that says, like, hey, we can back out either whenever we want, or if we don't feel that results are sufficient, we can back out of the deal. I mean... yeah, PBC's in a tough spot, man. You know, but they're gonna be forced to perform. But and then Davis hasn't had a fight either. I know he just had to sort out his legal issues. So, but you know, you would think he would have something announced before this inaugural event, so they can announce, so they can promote it on the event, right? I mean, you still have about less than 2 weeks, so it's possible, but. You want that platform.
But once the fans won, because I think we'll both agree that this main event is better than the original.
Yeah, like we said earlier. Yeah, yeah. Thurman out of the ring for too long. I mean, Thurman, you know, has the mouth to get some publicity going and people would still tune in. I mean, but, and we talk about like how Thurman's been on a lot of these. I think he was like the first Fox. I think wasn't he like the inaugural Fox card and the inaugural, he was like on CBS as well. And they always chose Thurman to be in one of the first, like the inaugural fights for these broadcasters. It's crazy. So, you know, they must like Thurman a lot. They must like Thurman a lot. So Al Haymon must be a big fan of his, you know. Yeah,
it's interesting, but if that's true.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. That's crazy. So once again, guys, we appreciate you guys listening to this week's episode of The Last Round. Like we said at the beginning of the episode, please hit that follow button on Spotify. If you're listening currently on Spotify right now, it doesn't hurt us. It's free, helps us with the algorithm, increases our footprint in the podcasting world and in the boxing world, for that matter. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, rate us 5 stars on any platform you're at, Spotify and all that stuff. Takes a couple seconds and it's easy. Please help us out with that. as it would really help us in the rankings and get bigger and bigger guests. But as we cross the finish line for this week's episode, Mike, go ahead and let them know where they can find us and follow us.
At The Last Round 12 on Instagram, Twitter, or X, as it's now called. And be sure to join us next week. We'll be previewing an action-packed weekend. Friday the 29th, Oscar Valdez, Liam Wilson. Saturday the 30th, Arsene Gulamirian against Gilberto Ramirez. And the PBC card that we just touched on. Tim Zhu, Sebastian Fundora, Rolly Romero, Isaac Cruz, Erizandi Lada, Michael Zarafa, Brian Mendoza, Sherry Borachuk.
That whole card, regardless, pretty decent. Decent lineup of fights. So as a boxing fan, those are pretty entertaining fights to keep an eye on. So once again, guys, for my co-host Michael Shepard, I'm Danny Z. This is The Last Round.
Thanks for supporting and listening to the show. Follow us at The Last Round 12 on social media. Rate, review, and subscribe. This is The Last Round Podcast.